imagine that.
What will I do without you?
You won't be. That's the whole thing. I'll still be here. We can still have our talks.
And reality space.
Yes. Don't fight me, Javi. Not on this. I need your help before it's too late. And who knows? I mean, perhaps you could even join me.
Welcome to Series 4, Episode 46 of Conversation on Eagle Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance, and joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hello.
Sabine.
Hi.
And Tamsin.
Hello.
With episode notes done by Matt and myself. So Series 4, Episode 46. The screenplay was done by Tony Osborne. It was directed by Costa Boats. And the episode synopsis be read out by Tamsin.
Ram moves to reassert control amidst scheming in his ranks, while Jay and Ebony find they're not out of the woods just yet.
Alright, yeah, let's jump into a very techno-centered episode.
Yay! So,
we'll come back to that, yay. Still unable to find the two fugitives, Java threatens Ved if it turns out that he's helped them escape. When he questions her authority, he's brought down to Earth by Ram. Shortly after, Java and Ram force Mega to tell them about the confidential work that Ved has had him doing, which turns out to have been adapting the Paradise program for Ram. Ram quickly goes from anger at his code being touched to being impressed with the work. So panel, this is actually the last time we're going to see Ved in Series 4. What do you make of that and the integration of Mega?
Honestly, it took me a while to realise that that was the last time we were going to see Ved. And I've got to be honest, it was such an interesting conversation that he went out on with Java. And it's like, yet again, it's another reminder of what we lost in this series when we lost Ved. It's such a shame. And yeah, it's really disappointing. I don't know if anybody else felt that way.
Disappointing is mild, because you had all this time to set up his exit, and this is it. I mean, yeah, it was a nice conversation, but this is it. Like,
yeah, it just feels mind blowing.
I still feel like they purposely did not want him to have proper closure for his exit.
I think you're right there, Sabine.
Like, why else would you waste this opportunity to write him out properly, to give us more than just this, you know, to give us some idea of what Ram might have done to him, or what Java might have done to him?
It just smacks of they didn't even realize this was the last scene with Ved when they were filming. And it brings into question, why did they keep him on for the rest of the season after axing Chloe? I don't know what the heck they were even thinking. What was going on behind the scenes? And it's such a disappointment, because Ved's energy here is intriguing. You know, I want to see where I want to follow him out of the room. You know what I mean? I want to know where Ved's going. I want to know what Ved's thinking. His frustration just feels so real, so genuine. The conflict, you know, the tantalization of knowing that if Ram isn't here, we could run the show. We could make things better. We, you know, maybe even thinking about the reasons he joined the Technos, what he was there for. And now, and his brother's on the run. The conflict of, we haven't found him, but does Ved even want to? You know, there's just so much, you know, and it leaves the room, and it something goes with him when he walks out of that room. And it's just, I don't know what they were thinking, but it's a shame is what it is.
Yeah, it really.
There were so many things they could have done. Like, even give us a glimmer of, okay, Ram got rid of him because he did help Jay.
Yeah, or he's suspicious.
Or Java got rid of him because he's a threat.
Yeah, I mean, he had reasons why to get rid of him, because Ram's come around the corner. He's literally been hearing Bed basically saying, oh, well, when Ram's gone, I'll be the one that's in charge. And it's like, okay, so that is more than enough reason for someone like Ram to get rid of Bed. It would have been nice.
It's frustrating.
It is. Yeah.
In literally the first couple of minutes, we had three direct reasons why Ram could have got rid of Ved. Like,
yeah.
Going after, worry about Jay. Did he help Jay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tampering with the Paradise Code.
Yeah.
And then what you just mentioned, like, the three distinct reasons, but yeah. All lead to nowhere. Nothing is like, he just vanishes and that's it.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
Does anyone else feel that it would have been also nice just to see someone actually gotten rid of, as opposed to, like, him yep. being led away? Have a scene like that.
Even having him unconscious somewhere would have been more closure than this.
Yes, because the only person that we've seen, well, we've seen two people get disappeared in front of us, which were Jack and Ellie. And they're both obviously going to come back. Spoiler. But yeah, it would have given us, like you say, it would have given us some closure. As it is, we just go directly from that into back with Mega, and it's, oh my god, his posture at that computer, it made my back hurt. At the ripe age of 30 something, I was like, no, you need to sit properly, because when you're my age, you'll be in agony, hunched over.
And yet it's fitting with how most,
yeah, that's true,
people sit at that age, especially those into computers and gaming.
I think this is a better introduction to Mega than the scene we got before. Everything about his energy exposition, it's explained very quickly. Okay, so Java, she sees him, she acts as though he's someplace he shouldn't be and is doing something he shouldn't be doing. He's very twitchy and uncomfortable and not quick to admit what he's working on. And then he tells her, I'm working on this program for Ved. And he's anxious about that because he doesn't, you know, clearly he and Ved maybe aren't supposed to be doing this. That all sets up Mega much better than the one where he and Ebony have a rapport mm-hmm. out of the blue. This yeah. face we've never seen before. This is a better introduction. It was the original introduction before they went and did that pickup shot with him and Ebony. And and so I think they could have been done a little bit more with this. Like, Mega's left holding the bag because Ved disappeared, you know, like that. But this would have been the best introduction if they'd actually done something with it. And of course, I thought his energy and being confronted with, you know, Java and Ram finding out that he's been doing this. And then this, when Ram looks at the code and is impressed and happy about it, da da da. So I think this should have just been Mega's introduction, and they could have just beefed it up a tiny bit more, but this should have been we met him.
Mm. Yeah.
The code annoys me, though. So, so much.
Go for it, Sabine.
I just can't. It's just so much random gibberish. It's like they let a toddler on the at the keyboard.
I suppose it looks cool on the screen. No one's going to notice. yeah, just to, like, tie that scene up as well, like, what did you make of, like, kind of Java being in charge and Ram giving her that authority and power?
It makes sense because of a little bit of how she handled things when he was out of commission.
It does make sense. This isn't the first time we've seen Java running the show. Like, from the moment we've met the Technos, it's clear that he could always count on Java to make sure stuff got done. She's one of the few Technos yeah. you ever see the Technos running. And so it seemed incredibly logical to me.
Yeah, I agree.
I guess for me, it just makes sense simply because Ram has been going on about loyalty. He's originally stated the only people he actually trusted were Java and Ved. And after what Ved did earlier, he no longer trusts Ved. So Java is left. It makes so much sense that he makes her the person in charge. He knows nobody likes Java, so she will always come to him.
I also think Java, when it comes to the tech, does not have the vision of, let's be honest, Ram or Ved or Mega. So I think with her in charge, Ram can expect his wishes to be carried out in terms of the tech to the letter, as opposed to Ved and Mega, who've been doing their own stuff behind the scenes.
Yeah, she simply can't. She doesn't have the skill for that.
Yeah.
She's also not aspirational. You know, she's not a visionary. And this isn't, I'm not like dogging on her, but she does not seem to think further than what the plan already is, and keeping the plan as it is. Is where if it was Ebony, she'd be like, what can I do with these resources? And Siva's like, I want something away from all this. You know, Java, she doesn't act on any of the dreams that she has. She has expressed wanting more than this life, but she doesn't know what to do with the resources at her disposal to get that life. So she does stay in line. And yeah, that would be appealing to someone like Ram.
Yeah. And I mean,
and without her sisters there, she has no one else.
Yeah. But Java also, she gives that middle management, like you said. She's not creating anything. She's just keeping things in line. She's not going to change or upset the status quo just to some extent.
In a somewhat anticlimactic resolution, Pride saves Mouse from the Techno Patrol just in time, and brings her back to the mall, where Celine berates her for going outside alone.
You must never go out on your own.
Okay.
Not when things are like the way they are.
Okay.
It's too dangerous, Mouse. Do you understand me?
Yes. Can I go now?
Go on.
So yeah, in a very techno-heavy episode, what did you make of the Morat storyline and the lack of action as the technos build themselves back up?
If I'm honest, I'm actually struggling to think of what to actually say about this. Because we all knew that Pride was going to save Mouse. That was no great surprise. And this is all in service to Pride's big redemption arc. And I've got to be honest, I'm really not here for it. And I find it hard to summon up the energy to really talk about it. As for Celine telling her not to go outside, I mean, that's basic. She shouldn't have been going outside. There was a curfew in place. So, yeah.
The only thing I liked about it, I guess, was some of the cinematography, some of like the shots, like instead of just full close-ups all the time, there were some nice wide shots that I enjoyed. I liked Mouse's energy. Just she's really bringing it, that this is a little girl who is longing for more than this life is offering, more than what her caregivers are offering. Even when she's being lectured, I liked the energy between she and Celine when she's being lectured. You know, Mouse isn't scared. She doesn't feel bad for disappointing Celine. She's like, yeah, I hear you. You know, I guess this is my life, you know, and even Celine, you can tell she's only venting out of frustration and feeling helpless because she knows deep down, I can't even keep this 6-year-old safe. Like, I can't do anything. Every hope I had when I thought I could make the city better and run this mall, I can't do any of it. I thought their energy was pretty good. And, but that's pretty much it. I didn't really care for the dialogue. I didn't, care for, you know, Pride, who's sitting here walking around still acting shocked that nobody really wants to be around him. You know what I mean? Like, where did your self-awareness go, Pride? You know, even your sense of shame. Anything. You're just sitting here waltzing around like nothing. You haven't done anything horrible to these people who trusted you and shocked that they just can't be bothered with you right now. You know, but the energy between Mouse and Celine, that was good. I liked that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the most interesting thing that came out of it is that the Technos, as they're trying to reassert themselves, are doing what the Chosen kind of did, which is trying to shut everything down.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to control the flow of information. They're trying to control people's bodies, where they're allowed to go in the city. And so, you know, I mean, this is the death rattle now, isn't it, for them?
Not even just where they're allowed to go, but even what they're allowed to wear.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, yeah.
That's, I'm...
No matching patterns.
Nope, no mixing plaid and stripes in your attire. Because otherwise you'll be thrown into a cave.
Yeah.
That's, seriously, those rules on that whole new Orders of the City list are just absurd.
They do feel like they've been created by Java, though, which I think is kind of nice and in character.
Yeah, they do, but like the whole, we're fed up with the lack of order in this town. We demand structure and control. And above all, the should we at any time choose to be inconsistent or incredibly unfair or even deemed to be stupid, that is entirely our prerogative and will remain so until the end of time.
You actually read those rules? You know what? I've never read another piece of paper in this show since the Bill of Rights. And you want to know why? You guys may not realize this. I paid attention to what was actually on the paper for the Bill of Rights. And did you know it's just Bray's name over and over and over again?
Yeah. No way. Yeah. Are you for real?
No, I'm just messing with you. No, that's just a private joke. When I was younger, my uncles, I got them into the tribe. And so my uncle Anthony made me my own personal tribe. And it was fantastic. It had like a tin of beans, ketchup, some funky Barbie clothes, a chicken keychain. You know, just some really fun My mm-hmm. Tribe survival kit. And he wrote like this whole paper, directions for opening the box and enjoying being in Tribe World. And it included the Bill of Rights. And it's typed up. Bray's name. Just over and over again, the font getting bigger, more eccentric, exclamation points. And it was just the Bill of Rights is Jenny screaming.
Sorry, Danny, who's that? I had to do it for Maggie. I don't know her.
Danny who?
Or him. Or him. It could be a him. That's so cool, though. What great uncle.
But yeah, I just cannot help myself when they put strange pieces of paper like that.
Yeah.
Into view on a screen. Because I want to know what kind of ridiculous things they've put on it.
It's interesting, though, going back to the scene, going back to the Morats. I mean, I felt like we have had at least an attempt to do something with the Morats in season 4. But going forward, we're going to get more scenes like this, which feel repetitive. Mm-hmm. And boring, and you know the writers just want to be writing about Liberty mm-hmm. and the Technos as opposed to anything in the mall. And it feels very much in this scene that their attention's drifted quite far from the mall rats.
Something in the scene that I did find interesting, though, is Celine's annoyance at the fact that Mouse wants to learn to read, and whoever has time for something like that in a world like this.
Yes, yes.
It's such a big contrast with season 1 Celine.
It's even a contrast, though, to what she said when she went in and had her list of things that she wanted from mm-hmm. the Technos.
Yep, because it's something she wanted for these children, and ever since she found out Pride lied to her, she suddenly doesn't care about anything anymore.
Yeah, but I mean, that's just girls in Tribe World, let's be fair.
Yeah, but it's just ridiculous. I'm actually glad that we have Siva to just tell Mouse that, sure, honey, I'll help you with this.
Yeah. I love the relationship between Siva and Mouse.
Yeah. She feels so much more motherly than, well, Celine has.
Yeah.
Even though people always deem Celine kind of the tribe mother for ages, but.
Well, I mean, she is very motherly, and she looks after all those kids.
She takes them in.
But The other thing I really liked about Siva in this, though, is the way that she's not, she will stand up to Lex and she's like, who do you think you are, Lord Mark?
Mm-hmm.
I liked that table scene. I thought it was dynamic. It had a nice energy, a nice flow, a nice casual reminder that this is their home. And the back and forth, even though what they're talking about isn't all that important, we that banter is necessary to remember these are people just trying to live in this world. And sometimes you need meaningless chatter among them, chatter that can express how they feel about each other and how they relate to each other, how they get along. And there hasn't been enough of that in this season, of just them being humans with each other. And so I just like the casual staging. You know, I like that for Siva and Lex, his reading skills or lack thereof isn't a sore spot for him. So Siva did, she made him feel comfortable enough in his skin that she can literally tease him about how well he can read and he's not offended. Yeah. It doesn't bother him. Mm-hmm. You know, things like that. I like those little moments, you know, Mouse is expressing wanting to read and you've got Sammy like, ugh, you know what I mean? Which is just a very realistic reaction. And even not just that Siva goes, I'll teach you to read, sweetheart. It's the way Mouse mouths back to her, thank you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
I love
like
that.
Mm-hmm. Those small so things humanize these people and remind you who they are and how they are with each other. And I liked that table scene a lot.
Yeah. I mean, there again, though, there's frustration there because I would like to see more of Siva and I feel like we're being deprived.
Back at the mall, May apologizes to Pride and hopes that there might still be a chance for them despite the presence of Celine.
I think there's a few things we have to go over.
The only thing I want to say to you is I'm sorry.
Don't. I know what it felt like being hooked on a game.
Is there anything else?
Like?
Me. And you?
I think we both need a bit of space before we go over that, May. Lots of things have happened since we were together.
By things, I assume you mean Celine.
But Pride, as usual, avoids giving her a complete straight answer. So yeah, we have touched on it a bit, but yeah, what do you make of Pride falling back into his old habits when it comes to treating May?
I was so rude then. It enraged me so much. While you were speaking. Apologies. Mm-hmm. Honestly, though, I just can't with this. Firstly, I hated the way that it was framed with Celine behind them hearing this. And so we're just going to be on the Celine jealousy train. Like, oh, you lied to me, but also you want to get back with May. Like, as if. Come on. You know how he treated May. May's the last person he wants to get back with. If this was Amber, yeah, okay, I could see your point of view, Celine. But come on. So I hate that it's just going to be a facilitator for that. And like you say, I hate the fact that he cannot be straight with me. Just be honest. I'm not interested. I'm with somebody else. Yeah, I shouldn't have messed you about the way I did. I'm sorry you're addicted to reality space. And that was the thing we were sharing for a bit. But I'm over that now. Move on. You know?
It's like all he should have said was, I'm just not into you.
Yeah. He won't do that, though, because he wants to keep his option open there, I think.
Yep.
He's definitely the sort of guy that would text you at midnight going, you up?
Yeah. Maybe he's just keeping his options open in case he screws up with Celine permanently.
Yeah. Well, he's just going to keep May in a holding pattern because he can. Because the sad thing about this is Pride is probably the nicest boyfriend May's ever had, which is depressing in itself.
Yeah, poor May.
Yeah.
They were barely in a relationship. If you call it a relationship.
Yeah, but the way she looks at him.
I know what you mean, though. I'm just poking
it
fun.
It is quite dark when you think about it. That this is the guy that she's desperate to be with because he's treated her better than any of the other. Like, come on.
No, it is sad, yeah, because the way he's treated her has been awful. But from her perspective, yeah, this has probably been the best treatment from a guy she's had, probably. Yep. And that's the way it was sad, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think you said it exactly right. He's keeping it open as an option.
Mm.
I think that's one of the worst bits about him. Like, he could have just put her down gently. Like, they've been through a lot, but he's moved on. Simple as that. But no, I think it's more an option to be kept open in case he messes things up with Celine.
Well, he has. He doesn't know what his relationship is with Selena.
And yeah, the next scene is literally, have I messed this up? Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that why you kept it open, Pride?
No doubt.
Oh, he's a...
He's a piece of work. He definitely is.
Yep.
Right, so what did I miss? Sorry.
Oh, we were just talking about May, Selena, and Pride.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, one, I love that hallway shot, even though logistically it doesn't make any sense that May doesn't notice Selena's there. I still think it's gorgeous. I even like the way it's framed, that there's a baby cradle right next to Selena as she's watching this moment. You could almost say artistically that it's trying to show that all the things that Selena has hoped for and wished for and longed for, like, that's what she's standing there representing, the life she's wanted. And she's looking at it wash away, you know, as these two are confronting each other. So my theory that May didn't remember what was going on between her and Pride until she, like, overheard he and Jay's discussion and stuff, I think that's still true, because this is the first time May has confronted Pride and wanted to talk about them since she came back. Why would she suddenly want to talk about them when she's been back for, what, weeks now and seen the two, he and Selena, together and hasn't been affected by that at all until that one day she heard Jay and Pride talking and then it all came flooding back or whatever. And Pride has the audacity to tell her, we need space before we can discuss this. Are you frigging kidding me? Are you frigging kidding me? There's no excuse not to have this discussion with her. None. Except he don't want to have it. That's all it is. He doesn't want to have the conversation. There's no reason to put her off from having this conversation other than you're a coward who doesn't want to have it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as we just figured, he wants to keep his options open in case he screws up too badly with Selena.
Ugh. That upset me so much. Here is May, who he was lucky. She came home and didn't question him at all about them, about his lack of, you know, investment to save her, or the fact that he shacked up with her best friend. It never came up. She didn't care. Neither he or Selena felt the need to discuss it with her. It wasn't even a conversation. It's like the writers forgot that May and Pride had a thing completely, you know? And then one day they remembered after she'd been back all this time. And then they were like, oh yeah, this probably should get addressed at some point. And she finally is like, yo, can we talk? Been remembering and feeling some things. And he's like, I think we need some space before we discuss that. I would have found the nearest staircase and thrown him down it.
You've raised an interesting point, though. Like, why now? And I wonder if, yeah, it could easily have been that conversation that she overheard. But I also wonder if them sort of being addicted to reality space at the same time, sneaking off with each other, it was very much framed as an affair. And now he's gone cold turkey and they don't have that. I wonder if some of this is about May discussing, you know, what are the boundaries? What are we to each other? What is going on here?
Yeah, did she even realize they weren't together anymore?
In a better show, in a better season, I would agree with you that something deep like that is being inferred here. What we've, in this script, in this season, I think you're aiming too high.
Yeah. So often, I aim for the sun.
Because that is a lot of nuance, and I applaud you for even dreaming that this script could offer that to us. It was, you're such a dreamer. I love that about you, Tamsin.
I love that for me too. But yeah, he's just, he reminds me of Ross Geller from Friends.
Mm. Oh my gosh, Pride made me like Ross. Ugh.
This wasn't this bad. Ross wasn't this bad.
Ross is a nightmare.
I hate Ross, and yet when I have to compare him to Pride, I'm like, you know, Ross really isn't that bad.
Don't compare him to Pride. Come on.
No, Ross is worse than Pride.
Wait, no. Ross hasn't treated his girlfriends as bad as Pride has. No. I won't have that. I will not have that Ross slander. He has not treated women the way Pride has. No. Not having that. No.
I'll just leave it that. That's debatable. That's debatable.
It is. Some ladies.
No, sorry, I'm not having that. I'm not having that, Ross slander.
I think it's 3-1 here, Lance.
We'll table that one. We'll show mercy and table that.
For now,
but
he was on a break.
Shut up.
It could not have been more than 5 hours, and he's going to have sex with someone else. Come on.
Hey, listen, we've had Bray in this show. His dead girlfriend has literally been 1 hour.
but his dead girlfriend is the Rachel, right? Danny is the girl from the copy place.
Anyway,
sorry.
No, it's okay. It's we touched a nerve there. I love learning little nuggets about you, Lance. Continuing on with Pride's annoying avoidance. You go into the bedroom after Celine walks away, because again, I love the way that whole scene is shot. And she's in the room and she's confessing to him how she feels so broken and hopeless by all of this. And that, you know, she thought she could handle all of this. She thought she had it in her, and he broke something inside of her, you know, by betraying her, by lying to her face, you know. She gave him something of herself, and he discarded it so carelessly and without thought. And he did it more than once. And she's telling him this, like, I don't have it in me. I don't think I can do anything anymore. I feel empty. I feel broken. I feel helpless. You did that to me. Your betrayal did that to me. You know, you took something fundamentally away from me, and I don't know how to get it back. And all he can't even have the discussion with her. He doesn't even apologize. He looks at her like, how could you say that to me? And leaves the room. Like, he really refuses to confront anything he's ever done to anybody. I understand, fine, you don't want to deal with May. You didn't want to deal with May when you were with May. But this is Celine. You're supposed to love her. This is the one you're supposed to love. This is the one where next season they're going to pull it out of her butt so that you wanted to marry her. You can't even have the discussion with her. You can't even face down what you've done to her. And at the very least, the bare minimum would have been like, I'm so sorry for doing that to you. It's not what I wanted to do. I'm so sorry. Just that, the bare minimum of what he could have said to her. And instead, he walked out the room because he didn't like hearing it.
Mm-hmm.
Garbage. Hot garbage, this man.
Celine deserves better. May deserves better.
We deserve better.
Well, I mean, that goes without saying.
All right, yeah, let's leave Pride for now.
Thank God.
Yeah,
let's leave Pride.
Let's go to the other happy couple in this episode. So, hiding out at the farm, Ebony and Jay discuss where they go from here. And in this scene, Ebony reflects on the last time she tried to leave the city at the end of season 2, and her regret at not following through with it. What do you make of that heart-to-heart moment?
I thought it was interesting that they were back in the barn. Now, can somebody answer this for me? Is this the same barn that Amber gave birth to young Damien in?
No.
It isn't. No. Different barn.
This is the same barn where Lex took Siva.
Right, okay, because I was worried about placenta.
Oh my gosh! Yes, then!
Well, look, nobody ever washes and nobody ever changes their clothes. So, like, it would still be there.
An animal would have run off with that as soon as Amber and Trudy vacated the space.
Okay, good to know. Good to know.
Maybe that's what they were surviving off of. Who knows?
Oh, God!
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not allowed to give you messed up visuals.
I did like their conversation, though. And I liked how it put across how they're not compatible in their worldviews. And yet, they are quite compatible. Physically.
Okay, there are some things I feel about this scene that are great, and some that leave me heartsick. The great stuff. I love the comparison of Ebony to her sister Siva. Siva was in the same barn. She didn't know what to do with herself in this barn. She was ready to fight a blueberry pie with a pitchfork. Mm-hmm. You know, she was freaking out. Ebony finds this barn and she's scavenging for things they need. They find food and alcohol in the same barn that Siva was in and was just like,
And alcohol.
Right, you know what I mean? Like, and I do like that contrast to Ebony the survivor, to Siva who was helpless because she'd never had to survive on her own. I thought that was nice. I don't know if it was meaningful. It could just be lazy writing, but I did love that contrast. Two, I like that conversation of Ebony actually addressing this attachment she has to the city. Without love, the city was literally all she had. It was the only thing she could cling to. And here she is expressing that she, you know, yeah, I almost left before because I fancied myself in love with someone and I regret making that choice because I was just dragged back into the cesspit and infers that love was not requited. I also love the hints that she and Jay don't feel exactly the same about this exile. And it hints at the fact that Jay isn't 100% in. Ebony is fine with turning her back on all this. She's okay. She's burnt every bridge. Like, she can't remain in the city now, you know, and she's okay with it. She doesn't seem to regret the fact that they're running away together because she has him. This is what she's literally confessing to him in telling him this. I would run away for love. You know, I almost did it before and now I have it and I'm fine with this. I'm totally cool. I don't care what direction we go as long as we're together. Just pick a point on the map, babe. I'm with you. And Jay, just look at, I will say, this is one of the few times James's subtlety and his eye acting and stuff comes through. He isn't 100 gung-ho with having to leave it all behind. He had dreams of what he wanted the city to be, why he came here. And as much as he's glad he has Ebony on his side, it's kind of a consolation prize. And you can even, given what's going to start happening, infer that he got what he wanted. Ebony gave up everything for him and he's already losing interest, you know, and he's already questioning like what we're doing. He was grateful that she chose him, but now he's like, all I have is you. I don't know if that's enough.
The vision means more to him than she does.
And he stated that from the start, which I do think is actually pretty good characterization. From the start, Ebony was willing to give up everything to be with this guy after they'd slept together a few times. She was already like, let's do this. Screw Ram, screw everything. Let's just be together. And he was like, no, you're hot, but you're not worth that. You know? So I do like that continuation. Like, that's been a struggle. I wish they could have done more with it instead of just tossing everything they'd built up with these two in the trash, starting within the next episode. Heck, they start at the end of this episode. So, yeah, I think there's some great stuff here. And it also makes me sick to my stomach when you know what comes next.
Yep.
And it's reiterating as well something we already know about Ebony, which is, what she really wants is love. She wants to have her love reciprocated. And she is, like you say, she's all in. And she's prepared to do this thing with him. It does make me wonder, though, if this had actually been the end of Ebony and Jay, how would you guys have felt about that?
What, you mean them going off into the sunset together? Or?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
I might have been okay with that.
I would have preferred that to what we get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Heck, I wouldn't even mind if we reached this point and Jay's like, I can't do it. I can't give up on the city. I would prefer anything over Amber being the catalyst for this ending.
Yeah.
And then the whole situation.
Amber didn't deserve to be, like, right. She didn't deserve to be dragged into this mess.
Yeah.
They should have just been left alone to end or go on forever, just the two of them, based on either their differences or what brings them together. That's what I would have liked to see. If Jay and Ebony are meant to end, I'd like it to be because at some point they're not compatible. And they don't want the same thing. But the problem they found themselves in is that if Jay said he wanted to stay and fight, Ebony would have stayed and fought with him.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know how to end them without bringing in an outside party and making that outside party the problem. Because they've already set it up that Ebony would do anything for this guy.
Yeah.
And he would never, he's not ever willing to say, I just don't want you. He wants his cake and eat it too. Mm-hmm. And so instead of dealing with that, because, oh, gee, then Jay would have to be a jerk or they'd have to acknowledge his flaws or something. They made this Amber's fault. And it never should have been Amber's fault. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
yeah, yeah.
It's interesting, though, that when it comes to Jay, we can sort of, or at least people seem to be able to overlook the way he treats Ebony. Like, he's with her, but he's not with her because he truly wants her. Whereas we've seen other characters do that to women, and they get away with it. Or, well, they don't get away with it, but Jay does. I mean,
it's because of the narrative. When when a character is doing something they shouldn't be doing, you can tell how we're supposed to feel about it because the narrative is working backwards, hand over fist, to show you how you should feel about it. So, for example, if you go to an earlier scene, like Pride or even Bray, for example, when they were in the wrong, and they didn't even have to be that far in the wrong, the narrative allowed you to freely feel how you would. They allowed other characters to call them out, be upset at them, things like that. The narrative might even be push on you. They're wrong for doing this. You're not meant to be happy about the way Bray treats Sasha and Amber in season one. You're meant to be like, that's not cool. Why are you being such a jerk to her? You know, just because you're jealous. It's not okay. In season four, the narrative is bending over backwards to paint Jay as blameless in the decisions he makes and the people he hurts or, you know, or just cuts off. The narrative is working to make you be on Pride's side. And so you feel it in your gut. You feel
Jay's side.
Yeah, you feel the narrative trying to manipulate you, and it angers you even more because you're like, I'm not crazy. What this person's doing is wrong. I know it's wrong. So why are you trying to pretend it's okay?
Yeah. But I also think, you know, they never want to make Jay look bad. Let's be honest, that's what this really comes down to as well.
Yeah, no, we have to think Jay's perfect and the sun shines out of his every place.
Because we've lost all the nuance out of all these characters. All the nuance has been washed away. But I like you guys. I was just going to say, I do like the idea that this would have been a good place to leave Ebony and Jay and then maybe not see them for a while, have them turn back up at the finale where we find out that Jay has decided to fight and then Ebony's gone with him. And like you say, Liz, that would have made the narrative really interesting because suddenly we would have Jay after Ebony has decided to give up her life. She's followed him out of the city. She's followed him back into the city. She's fought alongside him for him then to basically say, oh, do you know what? I'm not really into you. Would have been great. You could have completely also understood why Ebony went off the deep end.
But alas, we can't have nice things.
No. And I mean, even that weird suit plot that they do in season five would have made more sense because, you know, this is Ebony retreating back to a guy that literally cannot betray or let her down because he's dead. He's not real.
So Mega lets slip to Java about rumors that Ram is planning to put his body into stasis and live in reality space. A tearful Java, who suddenly doesn't remember her conversation with Ved about this all, then confronts Ram, who doesn't have long left to live apparently, and confirms that this was his plan all along and why he came to the city in the first place. And shortly after, Java mysteriously downloads something onto a CD that she thinks will put her in control. So, yeah, what did you make of all those techno shenanigans?
Okay, if you put the shenanigans to one side...
We can't.
just put them to one side for 1 minute. I really liked the scene between Ram and Java, because we'd seen him before doing a Shakespeare quote, cackling to himself like a maniac, like he always is. And then we see him in this moment of total truth, where he's actually being honest with her. And it's such a different acting style from Tom. It's much more reserved. It's more conversational. He is just telling her, yeah, no, this is what is actually going to happen. And it's like he's taken all the Ram armor off and this is who he actually is. And he is talking to her and he's telling her, you know, this is how it's going to be. But the other thing is, originally, wasn't the plan for them all to go into reality space together? Mm-hmm. And now he's just going.
Yeah, because that's what we were told earlier, that he meant to go into reality space with Java and Ved, originally probably Jay as well.
Yeah, and Ebony.
And Ebony and
all his friends.
All his wives.
Yeah. But, so, if you remove all the shenanigans, the stuff that didn't really make any sense to me, and you look at this scene on its own in isolation, I really liked it. There was a lot of great acting from Tom and a lot of great acting from Megan. And you really, I would have liked to have seen again much more of this, more of these mm-hmm. moments between them, more of this sort of honesty. And I really liked in isolation that one pocket of them being together.
Yeah, I agree. When I watched this scene, I was like, this is what we needed more of. We needed more scenes of Ram being tender with Java, you know, giving us a reason as to what it is about Java that makes her different from the other wives. And I actually think if we'd gotten more of that, Ram and Java could have gone down as one of those great contentious couples that seem mm-hmm. like a hot mess on the surface, but there is something underneath all of it that connects them. They're some of my favorite couples to read about, like they're villainous together, you know, and they seem like they hate each other, but there is something there when they're alone that only they know about each other, only they share with each other, something fundamental in a way that they connect with one another. Because he's never tender with her, you know, it's just, it really never happens. He comes off as, I hate you, you know, and you're like, why? Mm-hmm. And this is a scene that's great in the storyline where Java loves him. because they cannot decide. Because she's genuinely devastated at hearing that this is what his plan has been all along. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it confirms that Ved did not bother telling her when he came out what the deal was, but he did tell some other people apparently. And she doesn't seem like mad. Like, how dare you make that kind of decision for me? That's not how I want to live or anything like that. She's broken. This can't be the plan. This can't be what we've been doing all this for. And him telling her, babe, I don't have much time left, you know? And she seems genuinely devastated at hearing that. And again, it's funny because just last episode or the episode before that, she's gleefully talking about his demise and her and Ved running the show. But now she's like, no, babe, you can't leave me. You can't die like this or whatever. But as you said, Tamsin, in its own bubble, it's actually really beautiful. It doesn't save anything. It doesn't make sense in the scope of their relationship because they're telling like three different stories when it comes to Ram and Java. But in this storyline of Ram and Java, it's actually great. Jesus. I can't get over the fact that they couldn't even keep track of what Ram and Java feel for each other in one season. Like, at all. They could not be consistent at all about what this relationship is, what it's hinged on, and how these people feel about each other. And they will still try to use this relationship for as some emotional crutch in season 5. Like,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, are you kidding me? Oh, I don't know how you get it so wrong.
I don't really understand everything else that's going on. So if someone can explain to me, what do we think Java downloaded? A mix CD.
I got nothing. Maybe she doesn't spend much time in reality space. So maybe, because I'm pretty sure that in the next episode, she's playing around in reality space. Maybe she's trying to see, could I enjoy this? Could I enjoy this life? He's so obsessed with it. This is his dream for us to spend eternity there. Maybe I'll try it, you know, because that's not something she...
He hasn't actually invited her, is he? He said, maybe. That's not come with me now.
Nope.
I'm confused because when I watched it, I originally thought it was the code that Meg had been working on for Paradise.
Right.
That she downloaded and she was going to take I get to use with whoever, Ved, if she can convince him or someone else. But yeah, I have no idea. Like, it is kind of weirdly staged, but I don't know.
Wouldn't it be in the cloud, though?
They didn't have the cloud.
They didn't have, well...
Yeah, but this is set in the future, so they do.
No, it's not. Then...
Damsel, we're not referring to that. No, but, like,
you can't tell me... You can't tell me that's the only machine that code's on. That can't be where it's been. They would have backed it up somewhere else.
Again, I don't think she was taking it. I think she wants to... I feel like she was just trying it out, because in the next episode, that's what she's doing. She's exploring what this is to see for herself. Mm. She's literally just been told that her husband's plan is to go away into reality space and take a bunch of them with him, you know, and she's devastated at that. Maybe she's only devastated because that's not how she wants her life to go. You know what I mean? She's like, wait, what? Mm. You know? And I just thought, with this, what she's doing here, and then what happens next, she's checking it out. Like, if this is almost like she's resigned to this reality, that this is what he wants, and if I want to be with him, that's what I got to do. But again, that only makes sense in the story where Java's in love with Ram. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I mean, the other side of it is she's not in love with him, but she's stuck in this situation. Because as we have said, Java's not very good at the creative stuff. So trying to get out of this, and she doesn't have any other options. There's not a Lex or a Jay who's going to take her off and she's going to go and live with them. She's stuck in this on her own, and she's tried to make overtures to Ved a couple of times, and he's just not interested. And I think she tried with Jay as well, and nobody is interested in her saving her from this, and she can't save herself. You know, I mean, say what you want about Ebony and Siva, but both of them have the capacity to save themselves. And she seems just to not have that. So you could argue, you know, she's just resigned to it because there's now no way out of it. That's the other way you could look at it.
Fair.
But yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Liz. If you don't, without any sort of firm idea of what these people actually feel for one another, none of it makes sense.
It's crazy. Like, literally one episode to the next, 1 minute, Java is like, gleefully, yeah, Ram's dying. He's on his way out. Next, she's crying, like, pouring tears over his body. Next, she's saying to Ved, let's get together.
It's so inconsistent.
It's so up and down. Like, so inconsistent. Not even, like... almost intentionally. It's like, why is this so up and down? Every episode is different. You get a different version of Java. Like,
yeah,
what?
Like, they didn't even try.
And she kind of reminds me of Cersei Lannister in the book as opposed to in the show.
Mm-hmm.
These are her sorts of decisions that Cersei makes, where she's just a complete moron, as opposed to show Cersei, who's less of a moron. I mean, she's still an idiot, but she's not, I mean, until the last couple of seasons, and then she really is just book Cersei idiot. But like, she's got more wit about her in the TV show, and that is what Java's giving. She is giving Cersei Lannister book version energy, where from one moment to the next she just kind of propels herself into one disaster after the next. And
The difference is there's a consistency in Cersei's behavior. She is the perfect example of a narcissist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, she's true. The main character in her story. Everything is driven by her narcissism. You know, even the way she loves, quote unquote, her children or her brother, it's because they're extensions of her. She doesn't love their dreams or what would make them happy. And Java doesn't have any consistency. She's not a narcissist, you know, so she's not driven to these decisions because she's the main character. She's a ping pong ball who's just going wherever the plot needs her at any given time. That's why I said her biggest flaw is that she has no true north. Java doesn't have a compass that tells us who she is and what she wants, and that's what drives her decisions. That's what you need. Yeah. A character needs that main base, that you have to know who they are at their core, what it is they want, because every decision is branching off of that thing. Java never got one. Yeah. She's just spinning in circles.
Mm. Yeah.
Because every character, even when we hate them, you can break them down to like, okay, what is your true north? What drives you? I can find it. But Java is like the one character. I cannot find what drives her because it's not consistent. Mm. And this is just in one season alone. I have no idea what drives Java. None of her decisions make any sense. They contradict each other.
Well, she's so reactive, isn't she? She just reacts and then reacts and then reacts. And yeah, there's no clear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, maybe Java's actually the token for all the writing that we've seen so far. There's no clear direction. There's no clear characterization, message, plot.
Vision.
Vision.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which also makes it tricky to interpret why she's getting this information, why she's getting downloading something on that disk, you know? I'm still torn about what she downloaded and with what purpose. Like, again, was she really wanting to try it out?
Next episode, she's just going to be playing around with it.
Yeah.
I mean, she's not the one who comes up with the plan to betray Ram. Mm. That was Omega. Who was like, I got a way to get you out of this.
Mm.
It's not like Java has a grand plan. Remember? Mm. So it's... I don't think she's downloading anything for any other purpose than, what is this? I'm just going to see what it is. If this is where my future lies, let me go pick out my room, I guess.
It makes you wonder how she ended up in this position in the first place. It does. Given what we've seen so far, like, could she have carried all of her plans through to get married to Ram, to become, you know, the basically his chief of command? You know, does any of that feel realistic given who we've seen she actually is? Which is like, we still don't know who she is. We're episode 46 and we still don't know who she is. Whereas, like we have said already, like it or don't like them, like, none of us like Jay, but we kind of know who Jay is. We know who he is. We mm-hmm. know who Ved is. We know who Siva is. We know Ram. We know Mouse, Sammy. A lot of these new characters, you know, they might not have as much to do, but we at least know who they are, or have at least the concept of who they are. Whereas with Java, who's had quite a bit to do, especially towards this end of the season, and yet we're still scratching our heads.
Because at time it feels like she only got herself in this kind of position because she wanted what Ebony had. She wanted to be in a similar place as Ebony was with the Locos.
But there again, all of Java's motivations are just related to Ebony.
Yeah.
She has no other character beat. The only character beat that Java has that is consistent is Ebony. She dislikes Ebony. That's it.
And even mm-hmm. that contradicts itself at times.
Honestly.
There are times when you're just like, okay, the one thing we know about you that's been your true north is that you hate your sister. And yet there will be times you'll do things in her favor. Yeah. And you're like, yeah. But why? Why? What's motivating you to do your sister a solid? That's why I hated Java for so many years. Because I was just like, this is like the worst character I've ever seen put to the page. I don't know what anyone was thinking when she was created and written from one episode to the next. What was the point of her existing? You know, how does she actually impact the story in any meaningful way? I hated her. Now my heart breaks for her. Because I'm just like,
There
was so much material here. If you had just picked a path. Somewhere on the map that's where you wanted to go. Like, anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because she had the potential to be so intriguing and potentially the breakout of this whole season. But instead of that, she's just thrown away, and they never do anything with her. I mean, I complained earlier in this episode, like, the lack of Siva, but at least we know who Siva is. We do know who she is. We do know what her principles are. We do know what she will and will not do. We kind of understand her relationship with Lex. And she's got a voice of her own that's separate to him as well. Like, she will stand up for herself. And she's gone on this journey as well. From, like, as you guys have said, when we saw her in the barn and she didn't know what she was doing or how to survive, to now when she knows how to survive, but on her own terms. Like, she's got the militia back and she is a fighter again, and she's not pretending to be a housewife. She's reasserted herself, but also she's kept the identity that she entered the ball with. She hasn't changed the way she looks. You know, she still is very outwardly presenting what a lot of people would say very feminine, but then she's also got this other side of herself, which is with the militia, with the fighting, she can take care of herself. And we know this from these small snippets that we get with her, these tiny scenes that probably can't, I mean, the amount of screen time that she's been on in this whole season can't be more than like 10, maybe 15 minutes, but we know her, as opposed to Java, who's had so much more screen time and yet nothing.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny that Java makes more sense in season 5 and she barely makes sense in season 5. And we all know season 5 is a fever dream. And yet she's more consistent in that season. You know, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Because even in season 5, you're like, what's the goal here, Java? What are we going for?
Yeah, but then is the consistency because they're going back to what they always do, which is Java hates Ebony.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's all Java got. Hate my sister. Corner.
She just stays there. That's her corner. She goes back to her corner.
Yeah. It's always the... Me and my little sister Siva were fine, and then Ebony came along.
But yes, I agree. I really like the acting from Ram in this scene. I really love the quiet moments. I think he's much more menacing, far more intriguing than when he's being theatrical. And I do like the moments when it serves a good purpose, when he gets quieter, calmer, more nuanced. And I prefer that performance out of Tom. I want more of that. I don't think we get enough. Granted, he's always fun when he's hamming it up, but I do prefer these quieter moments, and you can actually see his talent, you know?
It just annoys me so much that in this whole scene, we get Ram going on that he doesn't have long. And all I can think of is, oh boy, who diagnosed you? Who on earth told you this?
Yeah, but we know the cure. The cure is just going to be shouted at by a British guy. That's the cure.
That's not just why he's any. Not it's yet. Not just any British guy. It is Slade, okay? He might be able to cure a lot of us of our ills, you know?
That's true. That is very true. I mean, that's why he's not been cured yet, Sabine. Because Slade's not there to do it.
He just needs to get himself a bad boy. Okay.
He does, but with a specific accent. It can't just be any random bad boy.
Yep.
It needs to be a British one.
He just didn't need a blonde.
Well, it's not going to be fed, is it? That's incest at this point.
But it's like Jay wasn't doing it for him, so clearly he was.
Well, Jay did do it for him, though, didn't he? For a considerable amount of time. But I think he just needed the accent thing. That's what he needed to make him better.
He did. You know what? You're onto something there. Because he was always pushing Jay. It's like he just, It's like all he was missing was to say, Jay, I need you to be my zaddy, okay? Please. Yeah, you know, you've got the defiance. Yeah. You stand up to me. I like all that, you know what I mean? But you're missing a playful energy. You're you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I need something you're a little bit more from you. You're too serious. I'm trying to get you to be a little more fun and stuff. And he tried hard with Jay. And he looked at Ved and was like, nah, you don't have enough dominance for me. He was impressed by Lex. He was like, maybe. But no, Lex is too much of a buffoon. So, you know, that's what he was searching for. And maybe that's what he liked.
Brain and the looks.
Maybe that's what he liked about Ebony, but she was too careful. You know what I mean? He was like, okay, here's somebody who challenges me and she's sassy and I like that. Like, if Ebony wasn't so worried about losing her head, maybe she could have cured him. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was just waiting for his Pedro Pascal of Tribe World. And next season we get him.
He just wanted someone to say, listen to me, get up and walk. I want to see you walk across this room right now. Give yourself a shake.
I'm going to leave you on the floor. I'll bring you dinner, but you're going to have to get off the floor on your own.
And I don't want you crawling about. It's embarrassing.
It's official. This season has made us lose our minds.
I was going to say, let me break through this fantasy for a minute.
You can't be saying the fantasy. It's actually fine.
No.
No. We have to get to the next one. Because that looks...
Well, we know why. You're desperate to run on. Because it's the return of the Mac.
Yep, let's get her there. She's waited long enough. Come on.
Yay!
So that brings us to our final thoughts of the episode. So Ram decides to send dogs out to track Ebony and Jay. But ultimately, they lose the scent thanks to some borrowed clothes from a pair of convenient scarecrows. Finding shelter, they hear a noise and find themselves face to face with the Guyans, including Amber and Trudy. So yeah, what do you make of the reunion?
Sabine, this is your moment.
Everybody clear the room. Let Sabine have this.
Go off, Queen. Go on.
I think Trudy's look of absolute loathing says it all. Just the fact that she sees not just Jay there, but with Ebony. Out of all these people to wander into their forest, the is back. Of course Trudy ain't gonna be happy about that. And we see the tiny bit of foreshadowing for this at the beginning of the scene when Ebony's suddenly worried, like, okay, which way did we go? Did we go north when we were planning to go south? You know, and it's... You can see her thinking and see her slightly worrying with, crap, I think I know which direction we took and we were not going to take this direction.
Mm.
Because she knows where this tribe is. She doesn't want to head near Amber.
Are you saying that Jay purposely led them to the guides?
No, we're not doing that.
It was an accident.
I'm saying that Ebony realized which direction they might have gone into and wanted to go the other way.
Yeah, it was clear. You saw it on her face when she was like, we were meant to go north, but I think we've gone south. And you can see it on her face.
The worry. She,
the worry. Yeah. She immediately thinks of Amber. No. Yeah.
Yep. Because she knows where these people are.
Yeah. And I mean, they've never had that shakedown, have they? Amber, Ebony, and Jay doesn't know all this stuff. And Ebony's probably thinking, oh my God, if he knows what I've done, he will really struggle to forgive me.
It was very wet.
No, they know. He knows. He knows all about her and Amber. He knows that Ebony banished her from the city. He knows because they had those confrontations earlier in the season. It didn't make any sense that he was judging her and confronting her on things that he's heard she's done in the past, but he's fully aware.
But she would be worried about having Amber near a guy she has.
I actually don't think, I don't agree with you guys.
Jealousy is.
I actually don't think that's what she was thinking. If she was so concerned about staying away from the Gaians, she wouldn't have let Jay pick the direction. And she didn't seem concerned about what direction they went in, just that they go someplace, together, anywhere. So I actually don't think when she mentions that they've gone the wrong way that she's thinking of the Gaians or Amber. I think it's more of a just a realization that they don't know where they're going, you know, and making peace with that. But that's just me. That's where I just can't give the credit, the script, enough credit to have been that forethought. In fact, I think it's an incredible coincidence they run into the Gaians the way they do. I don't know what the Gaians are doing this far out when they know that the Technos are in the city and that Amber has already been snatched by the Technos. I don't know why they'd be this close to the city. I don't buy that we're 30 miles out. I don't buy that that's how far Jay and Ebony have made it out of the city, and the Technos are still chasing them. So that means the Gaians are actually closer to the city than they have any right to be, and not to mention how fast Jay and Ebony made it out there. I just don't buy... This just felt too coincidental. It didn't feel like they led up to it and were leading, you know, leaving breadcrumbs that this is... Nah. I just think it was a gotcha! You know, I do not think they thought this through. They just thought it was cool because we're bringing him back, you know? But I don't think it's set up. So that's just me. That's just me.
Interesting. Because I definitely thought it was set up that in that moment. But I think maybe we're all right, actually. Because given the sort of lackadaisical way that the script has been written, I wouldn't be surprised if the first chunk was written and it was like, oh, Ebony says, I don't care what direction we go as long as we go in one. And then later on when they realise, oh, we need to put Amber and Trudy showing up, and then suddenly Ebony's like, stage directions are, I wouldn't be surprised if that was what had happened. Somebody suddenly realised, oh, she would be worried about seeing her.
But I will stick with, I'll start with the things that I love about this last scene. I love this as an Ebony and Jay shipper, because this is the last time they'll ever be on the same page together and feel like a team and be meeting the potential that this relationship has always had and what I've loved about it. I love Ebony and Jay on the run. I think they're so cute and playful and determined and showing resourcefulness. I love the outdoor shots of them literally out there being chased by dogs. I appreciate the effort and creativity that went into that. I love when they hit the scarecrows. It's one of the first, I will say, this is one of the only times that I found Jay to be even remotely like kind of hot when he was like, take your clothes off. I was like, yes, sir. I remember when I first thought this, me and the actor are closer in age, so it wasn't wrong for me to think that. Okay. Just want to make that clear. I thought that was just really hot, very cool. You know, I even like the way it's staged. Like, they're running and they're just like, they've got our scent. We cannot outrun these dogs, you know. In fact, the dogs would have caught them if they weren't leashed to Technos, who can only go so far. You know what I mean? That's the only thing that's working in their favor, is that the Technos can't run as fast as the dogs. So I thought that was a nice setup. Jay hits the ground, like, okay, what are we going to do? And then realizes the mud on the ground and then tells Ebony to strip. I like that she only takes a second to be like, what? This is not the time, babe. And then realizes what he means. I even think it's cute that they took the time to dress the scarecrows. Like, you know that took effort, especially with Ebony's clothes. That wasn't easy, but they did it. It's cute. I love them running into the forest together, laughing. Their lives are on the line, and yet they're still able to find joy because they're doing this together. You know, the way they're teasing each other, that you smell. And it's so cute and so adorable, and it's the last time we get of these two genuinely into each other, on the same page, on the same team, wanting the same thing, and I think that's great. As for the negatives, it's not that I'm unhappy to see Amber and Trudy again, it's that I know what comes next that ruins this. This was a great surprise the first time I saw it. I was so happy to see our girls. They look fabulous. And I think this is my favorite Guyan look on Amber. Oh my gosh, she looks amazing. I do like that we see them again. I hate knowing what this implies. I hate that this immediately nosedives my ship. Immediately. Couldn't even just give me the rest of the season. No, as soon as Amber and Trudy pop in, everything's going to crap for my ship. And I just don't know why that was a choice they made. But so I'm two minds about it. Think it's great to see them. I loved everything leading up to them running into each other. I still thought, why are the Guyans this close to the city? What are you guys doing? Last time you did this, one of you got caught. Granted, I know you have more people with you this time. But Amber still got caught last time. You shouldn't be this far from home and as close to the Technos as you are right now. But otherwise, it was good to see them. They look amazing. And as for Trudy's look at Ebony, it makes sense that she looks at her that way, but I don't like that Trudy's personality and her feelings towards Ebony will have like nothing to do with the things that Ebony has done to her, just what she's done to Amber. That's what she'll bring up every time she's mad at Ebony or telling someone Ebony can't be trusted. It'll always come down to what Ebony did to Amber, not the horrible things that Ebony's been doing to Trudy from the day they met. That's the stuff she should hate Ebony for. But no, because she has been relegated to Amber's sidekick and Amber's cheerleader, that's what Trudy's mad about. And so even now, when she sees Ebony in the woods, this close to her home, she's not mad because, oh, this girl has been a thorn in my side from the day she came to my school and through the apocalypse has made my life a living hell. No, she's upset because you hurt Amber. What are you doing here? You know what I mean? And it's just, so I seeing that look on her face, I just know where this is going. And I'm just like, oh, for frick's sake. You have so many great reasons to hate her. Amber doesn't need to be one of them. Because even Amber doesn't hate her for the same reasons. You know what I mean? Like, it should be Amber who looks at her like that. Like, ooh, what are you doing in my neck of the woods? It should be Amber looking at her like that. Not Trudy being angry on Amber's behalf.
It always comes across to me as if Trudy doesn't feel she has a right to be angry about the stuff that was done to her because of the things she did while she was with the Chosen.
Yeah, I mean, there's potential there, isn't there, for that to be the reason?
Nope. It's as a writer, I know what it is. That she is just an appendage of Amber. That's where it all stems from. She's Amber's appendage. So anything Trudy's upset about, it's never about what's happened to her. It's only what's happened to Amber. So that the script can pad out how important Amber is.
Can we do a quick fit check on Amber and Trudy?
I told you, they look amazing.
Mm-hmm.
They really do. I love Trudy's coat.
I would murder someone for Trudy's coat.
Yep. I really like Amber's coat, actually. So you guys can fight over Trudy's coat, and I'll just take Amber's. Also, I like the fact that Ebony is basically covered in poo, wearing rags, and running into Amber and Trudy when they look the best they've looked in ages.
Yep.
Like, it's so poetic.
Yeah, even looking like that, you can't deny that Ebony still looks amazing. That's what's sickening. She looks amazing. Mm-hmm. The nails, the hair, the face card. It is all killing. Even though
it never declines.
It never declines. Like, she's still outdoing everyone in the room.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. But then that's Ebony. You'd have to put a bag over her head.
Pretty much.
And then also over her entire body. Just her feet are showing for it to ever decline, you know? But then she's got aura. Yeah, she's got aura. So, you know. No.
Without knowing where the story is going, this reunion is awesome. Like, it, the setup of it, everything, cool. Knowing what comes next, it kind of sucks.
And I was just going to say, nice to see Hawk.
Yes.
Yep.
See, yeah. Hawk is my zaddy.
Mm-hmm. We know.
That's who I wanted to be when I started role-playing. I wanted to be Hawk. Mm-hmm. And they were like, why not Pride? I was like, I thought he was dead. No, we cloned him. We need a Pride.
way more interesting.
I think that's why my pride came out as a better person, because I was channeling my inner hawk.
Probably. And I just wanted to remember pride the way you wrote it.
Oh, pride will always have the way Liz wrote you.
I think that that's what actually makes me so sad about the way pride is if I think about pride, I think about the way Liz wrote him for something.
Yeah. I think we all do who are, you know, in that world.
I'm so glad that my denial and delusion, you know, did something for you guys.
It's brilliant.
It means a lot.
So good.
Lance, how did you feel about the ending of this episode?
I mean, you guys summed it all up. Like, I love, obviously, Amber and Trudy being back, but obviously you hate immediately how and where this is going to go. So it just puts a dampener on it quite a bit. But I'm glad they're back.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Yeah, it has.
Convenient that as soon as Celine's like, I just don't know what to do and I lost everything, that Amber's like, hello!
I am home!
Yeah.
A sense of separation.
I didn't like that as well. The kind of connection there, like, okay, so we're immediately writing Celine down and out of the way because Amber's back.
I hate the fact that Amber is considered to be the leader of the Morats past when she when she leaves in season, like when she's killed off in season one. That's it. That is her tenure, in my opinion, the end of her being the leader. When she returns in season three, she is not the leader of the Morats. She is a leader of a completely different tribe.
And she's barely their leader.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the point is,
and Bray was their leader.
Yeah, and it would, like, I think, like you were saying, you know, writing down Celine, it's such a shame because I would have liked to have seen, you know, Amber come in as a consultant. You know, when you hire a big consultant for your firm and they kind of give you advice and tips on branding. She could have done that for Celine.
Again, to be fair, the way they've written Celine as city leader has been so poor anyway. Like, this is not all on Amber being
Celine's, they just don't know.
It's been so poor how they've tried to push up Celine, so... Yeah,
well, Celine's just been a placeholder. Let's be really honest about this. Celine has been a placeholder because when Amber was back in this, when she came back to the mall in early season four, they dialed down Celine's leadership of the mall rat. And then the minute she left, they dialed her back up. And now Amber's returning, they've dialed her back down. She's just a placeholder.
Yeah, and that's also Liverby.
Yeah.
And it bums me out because you guys know I love Amber. I love season one Amber. And I love Beth Allen's performance of her throughout the show. Regardless of what was written for her, I always loved Beth's performance. And it just stinks that because of their choices, because of their Mary Suing of certain characters, that Amber gets a lot of blame for stuff because they decided to just make her the catalyst of so many things. And I'm like, why would you do that? She was clearly your favorite character and you actually sabotage her, you know? I mean, I can't think of worse character sabotage except for Danny. And Danny was, it was like circumstantial, you know what I mean? Like, they lost Beth and they had to write this new character in to take her place. So it's like, I don't really blame the writers for that. They were stuck in a hard place. There were places, there were ways they could have done it better. But yeah, Danny was sabotaged from the start. But Amber's, it feels like you didn't have to do this. Like, you are choosing to sabotage your own character that you clearly adore and think is the best person in this universe and the only person in this universe who can do anything. And you sabotage us, her, and make us hate her.
In a way, though, it comes across as very immature writing. You know, when you're first writing and you write a character and you're like, she's part vampire, but also a unicorn. Everybody's in love with her and she's got magical powers. That's what this gives. It gives you irrationally love this character so much that you make them the center of everything rather than making them a character with flaws, a character that ebbs and flows, depending on what storylines they need to be in. And instead you make them too much. It's almost too much. Amber's too much. Like, she walks in, oh, here's the true leader. She walks in, oh, she's going to take my man. She breathes, and everything that she says is perfect. She's never wrong. She's always correct. And it just, it gives that sort of, when you're 10 and you're creating characters, that's what it reminds me of. It's just, it's too much.
I mean, they're willing to even throw Amber under the bus to make Jay look better. Like, what? That is, what the heck were they thinking?
I don't know what they were thinking there. Yeah.
Were they thinking?
No, they were just, I don't know, was it audience demographic? I mean, did he poll particularly well with the audience? I mean, yeah, he's attractive, but there are other attractive guys on the show. Like,
I think that had more to do with people identifying with him.
Or the creator finding their real proxy stand-in. Like, the first proxy stand-in was Bray. But Bray was still written as a human who made mistakes and stuff like that. Jay was the new improved vision of the creator's proxy.
He was Suit 2.0.
Gosh. So yeah, this was a 50-50 episode for me. The things I really liked, I really liked. And the things I didn't, I really didn't.
To be fair, there was a lot in this episode. When I got to the 6-minute mark, I couldn't believe that we were only 6 minutes in. It felt like we'd already seen quite a bit.
Yep.
But when you've left it this long, you have to start packing.
They are accelerating now because the ending is a couple of episodes left. Like, you waited this long.
Seriously, you have a circle of writers writing the season who clearly never had a conversation with each other. It's only like, what? Tops, I think, 4 writers for this entire episode. I mean, season. Yeah. And they never had a conversation with each other
as to where
they were all going. They were just like, oh, this is my episode. I'm doing whatever I want. You know what I mean? I'll take the highlight reel from your episode. And even that, I'm not even going to do that. Like, they didn't check each other's work. I'm like, I'd understand it if it was a huge table of 12 to 24 writers. I get it. You can't. But there's only about 4. And most of the time, it circles between 3 of them. And you guys couldn't keep up with each other and know where you were going with this.
It feels like they were all just given a very specific assignment with a, so I want you to write an episode where this, this, and this happens. Do it however you want, but this has to happen. And that's all they got.
Then again, maybe it wasn't even the writer's fault. Maybe it was just the director had no clear vision, the creator, you know. And so they weren't even getting a clear vision from the creator as to where we're going with any of these characters. And so if all you have is an episode to work with, that's it. At a time, one episode at a time, that's it. That's all you have to work with. And nobody comes in to fact check to you or be like, oh, yeah, I like where you're doing this, but keep in mind, this character is such and such. You know what I mean? It's like there was no clear vision from the top down.
And that's why none of this works. That's why we've got characters like Java. That's why... it's unsatisfactory. It's not satisfying. And it's going to get worse for a lot of these characters. Because, like, you guys have all started to talk about Amber and what's going to happen with her. It's only going to get worse for our characters. We move into season 5. They're going to completely destroy any sort of... the foundations of Amber are just going to completely crumble.
Yeah, on that happy character assassination note, that brings... Series 4, Episode 46, to a close. Thank you very much to the panel, and you can show your support by clicking on that like and subscribe, and following us on all the major platforms. You can also leave us a comment, or get in touch if you'd like to take part in a future episode of the podcast yourself. Just search for The Tribe.UK, or Conversations on Eagle Mountain. You can also throw us a donation, just head on over to buymeacoffee.com/thetribe.co.uk. And we'll see you next time for Episode 47. So until then, bye.
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 Bye.